Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
The necessity. Welcome. Let's begin.
Greetings. Welcome to another episode of Real Life on Black Talk Radio Network. Before we get started, I would like to employ everyone who hears anything on this network that is constructive to them. Hopefully some of the information we will share to you tonight will also be constructive. Give some of your financial donations to Black Talk Radio Network to keep this thing moving where we can have these open discussions and possibly take something home that will solve an ailment within our homes. With that being said, I'm your host, Jenna, alongside of my brother, Roz. How are you tonight?
Hey, I'm still learning, like you say. I'm doing good. Glad to be back in the fold with the family tonight. Peace to Brother Scotty, as always. One love to you. And also, Brother Dave, he had a great show today, too. I'm going to give him a shout-out as well.
Yes, most definitely. I would like to second that. Especially you, Brother Scotty, you always have great input, and just thank you for hosting us.
Absolutely.
To get on into the topic of today, we're going to get into just a few stories. I think Brother Dave did pretty good with the news of the day. Kind of hard to come behind that. So if you had a few stories that you wanted to get into before we get started, we're going to open up with the topic of the night. What came first? The standing army or nationality? So we're going to get into that in just a few. Brother Rise, if you had, is it this video you wanted to play first?
That's the one about that we discussed. If you want to get that out the way, we can on that. And I don't know if you wanted to deal with the travel first, then we do the video, and then we'll get into the topic.
Yeah, I wanted to get into this travel.
Okay, so let's do that. That was posted. It's like the third to last article posted.
Oh, I already got it.
You got it? Okay, cool.
This comes from suolaw.com, and I found this. It was very interesting because we always talk about being proactive here and not being reactionary, whether we're dealing with people or just circumstances in general. I know we all have our hiccups. Boy, do I have quite a few. But constantly trying to figure out a way to stay one step ahead. So while I'm going through this this time that we all are hearing about the Moors and sovereignty and what have you, you know, I drifted down that line, looked up some laws, did a few digging around, and I like to ask, especially if I'm not in any trouble, I'll approach a cop and be like, yo, what's the deal with this particular incident? You know, they've been dragging people up under their cars and killing folks, saying that they sovereign, they don't have to have license and registration and what have you. I say, well, the Constitution says, and I go through the whole little thing, because I keep this little, I got a little pocket Constitution. So, you know, I'm fresh off of work, just approaching this guy in the gas station, police officer. And he said, yeah, all of that say that, but that's not for us to decide. He said, if we see you out here doing these things, riding without no license or don't want to give it up, it's going to be an issue. He didn't say what the issue was going to be, but it's going to be an issue. And so I continuously see these things. And I think I briefly touched on it back when we was talking about Ms. Goins and what have you. But I found this article and I wanted to share this tonight. Is there a right to travel without a driver's license in the United States? Once again, this comes from pseudolaw.com, and it starts off with right to travel versus freedom of movement. The phrase right to travel should be clarified because it's commonly confused. Many cases, documents, etc., using the phrase right to travel are in fact about freedom of movement, which is the constitutional right to travel between states at will. If anyone speaks of a constitutional right to travel, quote unquote, freedom of movement is the only thing they could be referring to, as we'll show. In pseudo legal circles, quote unquote, right to travel means the supposed right to, quote unquote, travel freely in your private property, automobile, convey on the public roads, highways without a driver's license, insurance or registration, and exempt from regulation or interpretation provided one does not engage in commerce, earn profit, or cause harm to people or property, quote unquote. Absolute freedom. Could it be true? How does the law work? 10th Amendment state codes. Traffic regulations isn't mentioned in the Constitution. Once again, traffic regulation isn't mentioned in the Constitution, the supreme law of the land. Therefore, the power generally falls to the states pursuant to the 10th Amendment. The power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. States are free to enact whatever traffic regulations they want. They want to provide, they do not violate federal law. States are free to enact whatever traffic regulations they want, provided they do not violate federal law as determined by federal courts pursuant of the police power. All 50 plus states through their legislatures, consisting of the people's elected representatives, have seen fit to devise and enact their own traffic codes and police them. Was it always this way? We're gonna go past that because it's a pretty good size article. It goes into the court decisions. Constitutionality. The states have all enacted traffic regulations, but do they violate federal law or the Constitution? Judging constitutionality is ultimately up to the Supreme Court. So if the Supreme Court disagrees, which they normally, not all the times, but normally agree with the state, you're done for in these cases. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time obtain and establish. Now, Brother Roz,
how you doing? Myself. My bad. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, it's a little bit left in that article, but you can find that in the real life timeline up under tonight's show. Yeah. What did you get from that, Roz? Because everything that I heard is that, yeah, that's in the Constitution, but it doesn't mention traffic laws. That's the first thing I noticed. And that everything traffic related is understood or interpreted by the state. So if the state law says you have to have a license and registration and a tag, then that's the law you have to abide. Now, did I get that? Did I misinterpret that?
No, you interpreted correctly. What it basically is saying, without using this specific word, is they're saying that it's up to the discretion of the, each individual state and or the people as to what traffic laws will be. And that, like you said, the Constitution does not provide specific jurisdiction over traffic laws in individual states. They just have to make sure that whatever traffic laws that each individual state puts into place does not violate the Constitution. So, and this goes back to the video we played with the guy who was the ex-military officer, the white male, who was saying that he's driving in his private property and would like to be left to travel unimpeded by law enforcement. And then, of course, we heard that he pushed the envelope to the point where the police did what they said. They broke the door. They sent the 130-pound Malinois through the window. It latched onto his arm, and they dragged him and the dog out of the car. And while the dog was still chewing on his arm, they put him in handcuffs. So to me, again, it's just a misinterpretation of the law. And I just think that, like I was saying in that show, I think that this logic that's being propagated is dangerous, because we're in a time where, you know, we're really in a fascist state. They are militarizing and have militarized the police department. Congress has given the police department carte blanche to murder people, and all they have to do is go in court and say they fear for their life, regardless of what any video camera says, but regardless of what their body camera shows, regardless of what eyewitnesses say happened. As long as that officer goes up into court and says, "I fear for my life, I fear for my life," then basically they have a carte blanche stand your ground law to just take people down at will. So you're in an environment like that, and, you know, some of our people think it's logical to be telling them this sort of legal jargon as if it really matters or makes sense in a system of violent tyranny and white supremacy. And I just think that that's quite irresponsible for some of our folks to be out there propagating this logic in a system such as this and where it's headed right now. Also, those specific laws, and I remember we were talking to Chris earlier today, peace to you, good brother, that stuff works in front of a judge. When you got a guy who has an assault weapon on their waist, a badge on their chest, a blue attitude, and blue meaning police attitude, which means slave catcher attitude, which means, you know, organized government-sanctioned militia terrorist mentality, and you're trying to throw that sovereign law and I'm a sovereign citizen and all of that, they have a carte blanche to shoot you down and say, "Oh, he made me nervous. As soon as he started talking that sovereign citizen stuff, I thought about Mrs. Goins, or I thought about, you know, the other brother who they say allegedly shot the police officers down, I think it was in Louisiana, and I got terrified, so I shot him." Like, this is the type of stuff we're setting people up for. And again, it just goes back to what the great, our great greatest grandcestor said, Dr. Welsen. We have to train our people, our children specifically and especially, to understand the real world. All of that stuff is fine, but not in the real world when your life is on the line. And I just think that there's a serious cognitive dissonance with the way some people interpret this stuff. They don't, you know, they're trying to use jargon that they say cannot be legally used against them in the court, so they do all kinds of outlandish things. Then, because they're trained to believe they're right by whoever taught them this stuff, they have an attitude where they're non-compliant. All of the things that you don't do when you're a prisoner of war as a black person. Now, we saw the story of a white person who did that and got his arm chewed up by a dog and assaulted and abused and almost killed by police. For black people, there's never almost, and there's no dog involved. It's just shoot them. So I just think it's quite irresponsible to be propagating this sort of stuff when this is the environment that we're in. So that's my take on it. What do you think?
Man, I agree. My sentiments have not changed. They're telling you exactly what they're going to do, and the information is out here to be had. Sometimes it just make you wonder, are they even looking at these things?
No, that's what I mean. I think that, you know, some of our folks are really just in a state where they're not thinking logically. And that's one thing that Neely Fuller implores us to do. And even Dr. Wilson and his others, too, follow the logic. And somehow some people put this in their mind in a way in which they conjure up that it's logical. But it's never compared to the system that we're in. It's just compared to nothing. It's just whatever thought they think. Go ahead.
Do you think some people are following this so much because this is what they would like to happen? They living in that once we get to their mentality?
I just think we're tired of being murdered and terrorized. So anything that someone says that gives us some semblance of hope that we can mitigate the system and protect ourselves from being terrorized and killed at will, raped at will, you know, cavity searched in your rectum at will in public, or vaginally cavity searched in public, then we're going to take it. The sad part is the stuff that they're being fed by some of our own people is dangerous, because you have to have a very high level of skill using these things. You better know what you're talking about. And again, it's not something that you can pull off in real world circumstances. It's something that's designed for you to use in court. And I still haven't seen anyone who's been like 100% successful with all of this stuff, because it's the type of thing that puts you on the radar in a way that you don't want to be watched by the system. So to me, it's just and a lot of times the people that are talking about this stuff aren't people who've tried it. It's all stuff that they've, you know, heard about from other people or read about in different texts, and they're just propagating it, but they're not willing to try it. And that's something I even said earlier today. I'm not going to ask anyone to try something that I haven't tried or am not willing to try myself. But yet you have a lot of people speaking about this stuff and they haven't tried it. They don't really care to try it because they kind of understand the ramifications of how the system can come down on you for, you know, even attempting this sort of stuff. But they'll make sure to tell a bunch of other people so that they could try it. And if somebody comes to them and gives them the impression that it works, then that person becomes the barometer as to whether or not they want to try it themselves. But to me, that's user.
Yeah. See how many lumps did he get?
Mm-hmm. And I just think that it's very
responsible. Brother Scotty, your mic open. You go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I noticed when I start hearing this sovereign citizen language is to trace it to its roots. And its roots are not rooted in our community. Its roots is these white people. Okay, a certain group of white people who already want to assert their dominance and think that they can do whatever they want to do, and the rules don't apply to them. This is the root of this. These are white people who are putting this out, and then some of our people pick it up. I guess I can't, you know, paint with a broad brush, but because a white person said it, oh, it must be true. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, I've seen these people who I would just say, they don't believe it themselves, and they're scam artists. I've seen people selling courses or information. Yep. You send them some money, and then they'll send you some documents and what have you. And it's fraudulent. It's fraudulent. Again, you know, we live in the United States of America Incorporated. It says it has a supreme law of the land, the U.S. Constitution, which it always does not follow. You know, that's you know, goes without saying. They break their own laws all the time. I'm talking about the government, but they're in a position to do that, because who's going to prosecute them? Not you.
Exactly.
Not me. But let one of us try it. But the document, y'all already laid out the information, or the article laid out the information. The Constitution says nothing about traffic or freedom of movement or anything. And like they said, they're talking about, hey, if I want to move from North Carolina to South Carolina, I have the freedom to do that. This is not talking about I'm free to travel down the road in my car without a license plate, without insurance, or a driver's license. That's not what that says. And then, like, right, you brought up the video from that y'all played before, this dude citing some UCC codes like they're actual laws, when they are recommendations from a private organization to make commerce uniform throughout the United States. And they recommend to these states to adopt these laws. So, but that don't apply to us as individuals, though, you know, driving in our cars Okay, that applies to a commercial vehicle, like a beer truck, any kind of commercial vehicle, a beer truck, a gas tanker, you know, a tractor trailer, where they have to have the license plate on the front as well as the back. Okay,
yeah.
And so like y'all said, the 10th Amendment says that the powers that are not, you know, in the Constitution that the federal government says, that's left up to the states to make their rules on that in each individual state. For example, in Arizona, like in North Carolina right now, you have to have an inspection sticker. You had to go through an emissions test and all of that. Well, in Arizona, man, I've seen jalopies riding down the road that look like that jalopy on Beverly Hillbillies. Look like it's about to fall apart. But they're not required to go through inspections because of that's the state law. That's all I wanted to add.
Yeah,
you're
and I
right.
think that's a good addition. Yeah, I want to get to them because I was going to say, too, another big thing about the sovereign thing is that they literally are have an affront to authority, and they'll basically say, like, I don't comply, I don't deal with the white man's law, blah, 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 I'm a sovereign, you know, aboriginal person, copper-colored person, or whatever. So, again, it also plays into the idea that they're against the system, but they're using the same information from the enemy system supposedly against them. And they'll use terms like copper-colored people, which was another term given to them by white people, because that term comes from the 1828 Noah's Webster Dictionary, which is another term the white man named you. It wasn't anything that any aboriginal ethnic group on this continent called themselves. None of them called themselves copper-colored. That is a designation given to you by your colonizer. So it all ties into this idiosyncratic form of thought sometimes. So go ahead, Brother Chris. Let's get your input on this. And peace to you, too.
All right. Peace, everyone. First, the Constitution, it was written, vehicles weren't even around.
Right.
I mean, just basic English would just even tell you that you get stopped and you say my constitutional rights said it don't. It was not written when vehicles were even created. So the state, you know, the state, and then you got the cities and the counties, how they set these laws, which they pretty much own the jurisdiction. So if you're traveling anywhere in the United States, and if that county requires you to have something in order to drive your vehicle, your car, if you don't have the proper, you know, documentation, the proper license, the proper insurance, they have the right to pull you over because you're violating a policy that the police has to enforce. So, you know, Georgia is probably one of the most, man, if you don't have emissions on your car, you can't even sell a car unless it passes emissions. If you do sell a car to pass emissions, you got to do it under the radar, but you could actually get penalized for that. You can't sell a car if it doesn't pass emissions. And you got to have emissions. If you do not pay your insurance in Georgia, you get a $25 statement in the mail saying, hey, you didn't have insurance for, let's say, 20 days. And then if you don't pay that, it turns into $85. And then if you don't pay that, they cancel your registration. Even after you say, okay, let me go get some insurance. And a lot of people miss that in the mail. They miss those letters. They go and reinstate their policy. Now you're getting stopped for a suspended registration. Now they can tow your car, ticket you and tow you, and keep, I mean, you cannot be playing that stuff here. Because, wow. It's that deep. And you just, like I said, and the state sets the laws and the jurisdiction, so you have to operate in order. And if you are going to go up against them, at least have the proper, at least have everything in place. Try to fight the system within. Don't have it and play crash car test them.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much,
yo,
just gonna keep running into a wall.
Here's the thing of it, because I would like to be free, you know, just the same way they do, and that's why I started looking to that in the first place. if some of those things work for you, if you're willing to take the risk to go do that, do that. Be smart about your family. We try to bring this information to you because it has real life consequences.
Yeah.
You have to, it's getting smashed to the ground face first by police that don't like you anyway is no fun. I mean, it's one thing to see these things happen on Facebook and on the news and all that, but try being in that situation with your hand behind your back, face first to the concrete. That is not a pretty feeling. You is not going to be thinking about none of those UCC codes, no constitution. You ain't going to be thinking about none of that. You ain't going to be able to answer no question. Your head going to be ringing. Why would you put yourself in that situation? If you can make any of this work, you should be doing it in private anyway. You know, you don't go out there trying to test it to see if this particular thing worked. And that's the reason for the show tonight. What came first? The people who don't, the people who have some type of freedom, like we're talking about foreign diplomats or whatever, they got standing armies behind them. Topic of the show tonight. But before we get into that, what was that next story you wanted to get into, Brother Rise? And before we go ahead, let me just get his number out real quick.
Yep.
You are listening to Real Life with me, myself, Jenna, and Brother Rise. If you have a question or comment, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. That number again is 704-802-5056. Press star to put yourself in the queue and we'll be with you as soon as possible. Go ahead, Brother Rise. My apologies.
Oh, no. I was just saying that I just think that a lot of times we want relief and we want relief as quickly as possible. So we'll fall victim to fantasy, stuff that's just, you know, that doesn't work for us because of the condition that we're in and the status that we have as prisoners of war, intergenerational prisoners of war. And I think it takes us out of dealing with reality and into a fantasy world that ceases to be a fantasy when you got those red and blue lights behind you and your life is in danger. Another thing is, don't pull, if you're going to test those things, don't do it with your family in the car. Because they've proven they'll kill you in front of your family. You know, I believe it was Philando Castile filmed his own death in front of his girlfriend and her daughter. So, like, the stuff that we're talking about is, like, really, really serious. And I just think that a lot of these things, I've said it for months now, that it's really just a distraction. And I think that even this whole UCC thing is something that is setting people up to make it easier for law enforcement to kill it. It's like, yeah, let's get them on this bandwagon. Like Scotty said, all of this stuff was created by white folks. When you follow this UCC, it goes back to Howard Freeman, and it was stuff that he had researched and put together back in 1991, and he was the foundation of a lot of this stuff. And some people have been able to use certain aspects of what he put out there successfully, but even he makes it clear you have to know what to say, and he writes down what to say and how to say it and everything. But most times people in a real life situation, like you were saying, Jenna, all of that stuff goes out the window. Most people get nervous, they get tense, they don't know what to say, especially if you're black, so you kind of unsure, like, is this guy going to come up with his gun on his waist? So you're already in a state of heavy distress before any contact is made, and then you're supposed to remember these laws, remember the different ways of saying these things, because they tell you that the police can use certain phraseology against you in court and all of this stuff. It's not going to work. And you saw the white man. He thought he knew his stuff. He was comfortable. He had no idea the police were going to interpret what he wrote, which was a UCC.
No, you know what's the best part about that, Ross?
What's that?
The best part about that video is that, because see, this one aspect you have to, you always have to add in. Mm-hmm. The fear factor from the police. That man was so calm and confident when he approached us. Well, excuse me, when they approach us,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying? They ain't, we ain't gonna have that benefit. So if you ain't even used to dealing with that type of pressure, because you ain't never been in no pressure like situations like that where your life could be on the line, then you liable to say anything.
Exactly. And the other thing is that
knee-jerk reactions, all kind of stuff, man.
Absolutely.
And, I don't think and people take this into account. Go ahead.
No problem. I was saying another thing he didn't take into account, because they tell you, a lot of these times they'll tell you, oh, write, you know, UCC code XYZ and put it in your back window of your car, and that's what you're referring to, which is what he did. What he didn't understand, something that was beyond his purview, just not thinking of all the potential variables, and we would just say, you know, the road open the deity was having fun at his expense in that situation. And how it played out was he put the UCC code in his window, and the police thought that that was a handwritten license plate. So when they ran the license plate and asked him if he was Gary or he knew a Gary, he said, no, my first name is Ron. I'm not going to tell you my last name because you'll use it against me. The alerts went off already, because they're like, yo, this is Gary's car. Why is he driving Gary's car? Something he could not foresee, that the police would misconstrue that UCC code for an actual license plate, and when they ran it, it ran back to someone else, which would have created an escalation of the situation off the bat, because they're thinking, bing, stolen car. And these are the types of variables that black folks will never take into consideration, because anything we have to cross every T and dot every I to make sure that we stay in a zone that can keep us potentially safe. Go ahead.
Let's just add this in here, just so everyone that's out there listening, shout out to y'all on TuneIn.
Yes.
Scotty put this up here for us, so we're going to share this. The UCC codes doesn't apply to citizens. It is recommendation of laws that states should pass to facilitate interstate commerce. And he goes on to give us when it started. The UCC first published in 1952. It's one of a number of uniform acts that have been put into law with the goal of harmonizing the law of the sales and other commercial transactions across the United States. And it was adopted by all 50 states. But remember, this is not for citizens. The UCC contains rules applying to many types of commercial contracts, including contracts related to the sale of goods, leasing of goods, use of negotiable instruments, banking transactions, letters of credit, documents of titles for goods, investment securities, and secured transactions. Nothing of which, when a lot of us get out in front of these police and start yelling these, start yelling these codes out, we are doing none of this. And I believe, and I could be wrong, but I think that nobody's actually checking these out. They're just hearing other people recite them, and they're not even paying attention to what it means. It's a very dangerous game. And I don't know if everybody know they playing.
But that just ties into, like I said, if it says something that falls in line with what they think it should say, even if it does not mean what they think it means, as long as it sounds correct, there's no further due diligence necessary. I just believe it and I run with it. And that's like the new order of the day. And I mean, it just ties into something that I've heard Brother Robert X mention many, many times. Black people are data rich and information poor. We have a ton of data, but we can just find you can find something online to say anything you want it to say. But yet we're information poor in as far as the accuracy of the information, that the data that we propagate as being accurate and authentic. And then some of us get so wrapped up in the data that we actually get mad and get attitude behind being challenged on certain things when it's just about trying to be accurate. And, you know, if I choose not to believe something that somebody tells me and look into it further and then ask questions about it, once I find that there's some shortcoming in that particular thought or ideology or idea, then you become public enemy number one. And that's really like the era that we're living in, because it's just something that's happening on an all-pervasive level. And you have all these cult followings of these pseudo YouTube scholars And when you start really digging into some of the stuff they're putting out there, it is just horrifically flawed and incorrect. And again, it's dangerous because, again, it's misinformation. It's us doing to each other what the colonizer has done to us, and we're doing the job for him now. So it's not a game. It's really serious.
Yes, man. I think you said all that need to be said on that. But it's going to tie back in to the topic, because we finna jump right into these. This article is coming from top10s.net.
Well, did you want to do the short video first, or you want to go into it now and do the video after?
Nah, we going to do the video. Brother Scotty, you see that video up there?
It's really short, too.
Yes, I got it. Y'all want it?
Okay, cool.
Okay, let's go.
Yes, sir, please, if you will.
This is like heaven right now.
Yeah. Alexis Bromley is from Nebraska. She needed a break from white people.
In Omaha, it's very segregated. It can be very isolating if you're a person of color. It's hard in Nebraska because it's a red state. And so you just don't know who you interact with on a daily basis, if they believe that you're lesser, if you're inferior, and how that in turn can affect me.
She says the current political climate has only made these feelings worse. So she decided to go on a Women of Color healing retreat in Costa Rica.
Hi, such beautiful smiles. Thank you guys so much for coming. My blackness is bold.
My blackness is uninhibited.
My blackness is strength.
The idea is simple. For 10 days, black women come together to eat vegan food, meditate, do yoga.
The breath in is the reminder that we are safe.
And to discuss the frustrations of being black in America.
It's like a mental game all the time. And I'm in these spaces where, you know, constantly getting poked and prodded. Oh, let me touch your hair. Oh, you're really pretty for a black girl.
Black people don't exercise. Black people don't hike. People are automatically going to have this perception of me before I even open my mouth.
So many people's ideologies are being validated that don't see us as human, that don't see us as people.
This retreat is one of more than a dozen black-owned travel groups, marketing trips specifically to people who look like Alexis. In the few years that most of these companies have been open, more and more clients are calling them up. At least five say they've seen a spike in interest coinciding with Trump's election.
The idea of black women reclaiming control over their own mind, body, and spirit is exactly what's needed to survive in a system that constantly tells us that our wellness isn't important.
We stopped taking care of ourselves because we were taught, you don't matter.
The retreat is the brainchild of Andrea X, a former Brooklynite turned expat.
I left the United States because I was sick of gentrification, racism, just dealing with being this black woman, trying to figure it out there.
It was 2014, and she'd just lost her job as a healthcare facilitator. What started off as a vacation in Costa Rica became her entire new life. She used all of her personal savings to form this retreat.
We needed a safe space that was outside in the United States to hold certain conversations and just to heal. I don't think that we can do that in the United States. I think that we're suffering and suffocating and just dying every single day trying to survive there.
Yeah, not every woman can afford to come out to Costa Rica. What can we do for the racism they experience, for women who can't afford to be part of your retreat?
I think that it's important for people in the United States, black and POC people, to start forming their own spaces there.
Easier said than done. White Americans find themselves in white-only meetings and places all the time, without even trying or noticing. When black people want a break from feeling like a minority, they often have to make an effort. Alexis made the effort, and it cost her $2,222. But for her and several other women, that's a reasonable price to pay for a retreat that bans white people.
Would having white people on this trip ruin it?
I'd want my money back.
Yeah, I don't think we would be as open and as honest as we are with the group that we're in now.
Yeah. Do you all feel like you've been stereotyped?
One thing I always got is you're so well-spoken. And I don't think people understand how insulting that is. What else would you expect from me?
I'm curious if it's been no different for you since the election of President Trump.
For black, we knew that racism has been around, but it's a bit more in our face now. It's made me had to pivot my interactions with people. And people who actually support Trump. Like, I can't trust you on friendship level, family level, any level, if you actually are supporting someone that, you know, is completely racist.
Is some of that anxiety what you feel you need to heal from here?
We're looking for ways to coping mechanisms, you know, and ways to take care of ourselves. Because we're not on the agenda.
Do you feel like you've increasingly lost the ability to see any shot at a relationship with white people?
Every time I have a conversation with them, I just pick up on certain things that they say, whatever. I pick up on the microaggressions, the passive aggressiveness. I pick up on it. So I decided one day to just eliminate white people from my personal life. And ever since then, my life has been way more breezy.
Do you think it's at all possible that the fact that white racism, white people have should have made you leave the U.S., start your whole life over somewhere else, feel the need to avoid them, it means that they've won?
They didn't push me out the United States. Because if that's the case, they could push me out of any of these countries because they are here. They're everywhere, you know? I feel like white people shouldn't even have passports because they've done enough, especially white Americans. Leave them in the United States. They do not need to come here. They do
you
not.
They should be even able to travel.
No, they need to stay in the United States.
But to a white person who's doing their best to be the best white person they can be.
I have no tips for a white person. My tip to white people is to let us have our space, let us have our room, and go hang out with other white people. We're okay. You know, you've done enough damage.
Lokaha samasta sukino bhavantu.
This retreat, much to Andrea's dismay, is held at a white-owned resort. That doesn't bother the retreat participants. They haven't cut white people out full-time. But 20 minutes down the road, Andrea and a business partner have quietly invested nearly $100,000 to build up their own private retreat space.
This is where we'll have the workshops.
Is this just like a long con to start building your own Black nation out in the middle of Costa Rica?
It is. It is.
Starting with yoga. Yeah. Next, there's going to be like a mini government.
I don't want to have a mini government, but at the same time, it will be a community of just like Black people living here.
What would you say to someone who's like, you know, it's nice as this sounds like paradise for Black people. In some ways, like it's motivated by the same hate that white people who want to create white nations and white spaces have?
I would say it doesn't have anything to do with them. This is about us healing our community.
Is it practical to create a Black nation in the middle of a jungle or to chase all white people off your property? Probably not, and most Black people don't want to do that. But the feelings of isolation that drove Andrea to build her own community aren't that different from what drove Alexis to this retreat in the first place.
Andrea has completely given up on the U.S.
I don't blame her. I have been places outside of the U.S. where I have felt more at home and more included than I have ever in my community.
Is that an upsetting thing? You know, you say it with like this serene face, but to like go visit somewhere that you're not a citizen of and feel more at home than you do in your own country.
Yeah, that's reality. Unfortunately, that's the reality of our country.
Okay, we're back. Raj, you there?
Yes, I am.
Can't wait to hear your commentary on this.
Yeah, I think the lady was quite realistic because she said, you know, there's no way to escape them. They're everywhere. They're even where she is now. And the resort she was using to facilitate the origins of this idea is a white resort. And she's now investing, they said, around $100,000, her and a partner, in building their own space that they will own and run. Now, I think what the interviewer said was quite telling. But how does it feel to not feel so uncomfortable in your own country that you go elsewhere in order to seek relief? I think it's something that's needed because Gus on the Cows has been talking about that ever since he got back on the air, that yoga was something that has really helped him spiritually. He said he's lost a lot of weight, and also mental health. It has helped his mental health tremendously. And we don't have those things. Most Black people don't do yoga. The majority of us will go to church on a Sunday. Most of our people are Christians, so that is our semblance of what therapy is. And if the church doesn't provide adequate therapy services, whether it's with pastoral contact or contact with a deacon of the church or something like that, then you're still going to leave with those mental illnesses unaddressed, or those things that you deal with that can facilitate mentally ill behavior, idiosyncratic behavior, is not being dealt with. So most of us are walking around with intergenerational trauma that is unaddressed. And even Dr. Wilson, we talked about this on a previous show, where like when they take the unemployment numbers into account, they don't take into account the many thousands of black people who just leave the workforce altogether and never to return, just because they cannot take being racially abused every day. And, you know, and I said it, you know, my wife was one of those people. She didn't get unemployment, none of that. She just left. And I told her, I said, you're never going to work on anyone else's plantation again. And we've been thankfully able to make that a reality. And, you know, I was working with her, starting her own business and whatnot. But that's really real. Like, there's a lot that I think that video is saying in regards to people feeling the need to escape in some form or fashion, knowing that you can never, like she said, never totally escape it, but get into a space where you feel safe and comfortable and you're able to work on self-improvement. You're able to work on decompression of the pressure valve of being a victim of this system. You're able to not have to look at white faces, because a lot of times, sometimes you need that. Just because these people are the orchestrators of your daily misery, if you're working with them and they're abusive and harass you, or if you're in an area where you have certain types of contact with white folks and it's just highly stressful, then yeah, you sometimes need to be in a space where you just don't see them and you just like, okay, let me work on myself. And then it gives you the impetus to go back out into the real world and face it another day and face it for another week or however long between, you know, these visits or this time that you take to work on yourself. And these are things we could do on our own too. That's one thing that's a heavy part of my spiritual practice is meditation and things like that. So it's something that you can incorporate in your daily life, and it can be extremely helpful. But yeah, I just find it interesting that it was all black women, and that they said that with the Trump election, this stuff has skyrocketed. And I just think it's because people feel more comfortable practicing racism openly, because we have a president that shows the example. I know in my job, before I got there, I heard that there was a cluster of these little white Jewish females that were basically taking all of the male resumes and throwing them in the trash and or shredding them, so that only female resumes were getting through to be looked at for positions in the company. And then eventually, somebody told on them and they were reprimanded for it. Not fired, just reprimanded. And that was it. So, I mean, even right before I got to the company, this was what I was told was going on. And there was a very anti-male atmosphere in there because of the whole hashtag MeToo thing was a big deal. And even though we work in the health, mental health care field, these women actually have their own forms of mental illness. Like, and they've talked about it, some of them. And other ones, you can just see from their behavior and some of the stuff that they say that they think it's sensible to say in a job. You're like, okay, this person got serious issues. And that's pretty much it. So that'll be my introductory commentary on the video. And then we'll chop it up a little bit more. But what was your take on it?
But yeah, right. Before I get into mine, we got a call in, area code 813. Your line is open. What is your name and where you calling from?
My name is Bill, and I'm calling from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Greetings.
Hey, greetings.
Hi. Well, hi. I simply want to chime in from my own experience. I've had issues with some mental health issues such as depression, and I've spent a lot of time out of the workforce because of that. But I did work kind of part-time here and there. And last year, I took it upon myself to become a sub-teacher. And, of course, that's just more added stress, dealing with all kinds of kids, all kinds of issues with these kids. You know, and pretty much I went from school to school. And then I said to myself, I need to kind of, you know, settle down and maybe stay at one school for a bit. And I tried that. But every time I did that, there was an issue. Well, these white teachers, administrators, or something. And it's like, you know, for the majority, there are only majority of teachers in these schools today that I find are white teaching our black kids. And there was an issue with one of these women. I think I was working in an office whereby if the kids had, you know, they would kind of give the kid a timeout if they were acting up or they had ongoing issues in the classroom and bring them in there. And pretty much I had been given a schedule to go by. And when I came in around about 8 o'clock, I think, yeah, I was supposed to be there at 8, but actually the kids didn't come in until 8:30. And so therefore, you know, I sit there and I kind of, you know, got on the computer, and there was another so-called, I guess it was the interventionist specialist, a white woman. And the first conversation and same thing to me, I would speak, but she wouldn't speak back to me. And then one day she just came out and said, "We don't pay people, you know, to sit around and do nothing. There are other teachers out here that need, you know, help. You need to go help this one and help that one and help the other." And of course I took, you know, affront to that because of the way she said it. Not that I didn't want to help any of the teachers, but I was simply going by the schedule I was given. Well, the end result of that was, I don't know, I felt that she's frustrated because teachers are underpaid and so forth and overburdened and so forth. I felt she was coming from that area. But yeah, again, I didn't want her to be disrespecting me. So it all came down to the fact that I came apprehensive in the next day and walked into the wrong classroom. And all the classrooms kind of look alike anyway. And I didn't see a desk there where I was sitting. So I kind of went into this, I don't know, other world, I guess. And I was thinking, oh, she moved the desk so she don't want to see me sitting down. But again, it was in the case I had gone to the wrong classroom. But by that time, I'd gone to the office and met her coming in and, you know, said nothing like that ever happened. And, of course, with substitute teachers, we're like on the bottom rung of the education ladder. And if they're not paying teachers well, you know, we don't get nothing. And we are very dispensable people. So when issues come up, it's you against the school administration and the teacher. And you're out the door if there's a disagreement, okay? So I didn't go back there. And then I had gone to another classroom, and they had a, what they call these teacher's assistants, a little white girl, and she had no control of the class. When the teacher left out of the classroom, kids did pretty much what they wanted to do. They ran around, you know, they did whatever they wanted. And they had something they would do with the kids saying, 1, 2, 3, you know, 1, 2, 3, or something for them to sit down and be quiet. Didn't pay her any mind whatsoever. The kids took over that classroom. So she didn't have any control. But in my sub-teaching, what I would do, which I thought was deceptive, if you have trouble kids in the classroom, you take them, you separate them on one side, or for the most part, if it's time for the bell to ring, you send them outside the door. And, you know, class quiets down because the troublesome kids have been separated. And I think, for the most part, she resented me seeing that she didn't have control of the classroom. And then it was a matter of her maintaining that control, and she didn't like to say I separated the kids. So she been calling some lies about me and so forth, and again, I had to not come back to that particular school. So I've been out there subbing for about, I guess, 6 or 8 months. But when you get into these classrooms and these white women are in there, that's one of their things. They want control. They always want to be in control, and they want to have some power, white women, just like the white men. So I just quit substitute teaching, you know, behind that. I just quit substitute teaching behind that, you know? And pretty much I've been at home, and I do some arts and crafts, you know, every now and then. And I think, fortunately, I do have my Social Security that I can fall back on where I don't, you know, the money would be okay, but I don't, you know, I'm not in a position where I like, have to go out and work. So, I unfortunately, a lot of people don't have that. They have to get out there, and they have to put up with all this kind of things that's going on in these white environments, working with these people, you know. So, I do understand that you sometimes just don't want to go out there. You don't want to be involved with these people in a work position, but they have some authority over you, all right? So, I understand the sister, say, you know, go away from them, get away from them if you can, which is very hard to do because they, you know, you find them all over the world and everybody's countries, but yet, you know, they want to kick you out of here when you come here for whatever reason they come up with, like the immigrants they're doing today. So I just have my passport, and I'm looking to see where I can kind of go in the world. And I didn't get all the information about this sister and her retreat. Is it a retreat she has?
Yes, it's a retreat that she has for black women.
Are you in BTR community?
Mm-hmm. It's called what now? The video is in the thread in VTR community, and I believe she gives the name of the retreat in the video, and I know that she's based in Costa Rica.
Costa Rica. And what's the name of her organization?
I do not remember off the top of my head. if you are...
Hold on, I got to find it for you, ma'am. Hold on just a second.
I can't hear you.
I said, I'll try to find it for you.
They just want to let you know what's been hiding, you know. So, and I know, too, I know that topic hasn't come up, but Roseanne Barr's show was canceled this week.
I didn't know she was a racist like that.
And then she came out with something against...
Ma'am, can you see the chat? Are you in the chat room? You're not in the chat, are you?
No, I'm on the phone. I'm on the phone.
Are you, can you get to a computer?
I can't, but it's not up right now.
Are you on BTR community?
Am I on your community? No, I was trying to register BTR yesterday, but I had some issues with my password. So I have to get back on there and straighten out this thing with my password.
Under real life,
I'm looking on the website now for her. I can tell her the information.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
If you just type in your search engine, Black Women Yoga Retreat.
Like, oh, it's about going for a yoga retreat.
So
you don't go there to stay for a length of time. You just go for the retreat.
Well, you probably can stay if you want to stay. But if you watch the video. I can stay. It's pretty long, but it's 7 days, I think. You stay there for 7 days.
And it's okay.
Black Woman Yoga Retreat. But they talk about more stuff than that. And put that in the search engine and Google it.
I have done a few yoga stretches and all, because you can pull up on your computer all kinds of videos, all kinds of, you know, exercise routine, yoga, and all kinds of things. I've done that. But the retreat, you know, no, I've never been one. But there's another guy out there. He's out of Chicago. He has something called audio pharmacology, where he's come up with these different sound waves, and he puts it on recording and things like that. And it's supposed to bring people to a state of, you know, I guess we'll call it relaxation, and where you can meditate and people can get healed and all that. I went to his group once in Chicago. But he's been all over the world with that. He goes to different places like India and some countries in Africa. He teaches people this method. It's called audio pharmacology. I can't remember his name right now, anything like that. But he's another guy out there that's trying to get people to separate themselves from all the stress and care that goes into trying to survive here in the United States.
Yes, it is a constant struggle. But right now we got to get to the top of the it's top of the hour. We got to get to the break. You are listening to Real Life on Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Okay, ma'am, before we go to this next topic, did you want to finish that last piece up? Ma'am? Okay. Well, hopefully others will find some relaxation from this constant stress that we have to be up under. This next story that I want to get to: 10 countries without military forces. And I'm going to just shoot down these. I ain't going to read every single last one of them, but just think of these names. You got the Solomon Islands, which they are up under the UK. You have Costa Rica, which they cut theirs, they just discontinued theirs. And it asks, so who's the protector? Guess who? The United States. You got Samoa. New Zealand is has a friendship with it, so it's up under New Zealand's law. Palau, spelled P-A-L-A-U.
That's Palau.
Palau. Now they are also up under United States jurisdiction. Andorra, I pronounced that right. Andorra, A-N-D-O-R-R-A.
Yeah,
Andorra.
I'm trying to open it up now too, so I could go.
Now this is up under France and Spain. None of these countries have a standing army. Grenada. Mm-hmm. Now Grenada is it looks at Argentina, Barbados, St. Kitts. It has a number of people that's looking up under it, so that, you know, that's being pillaged every way imaginable. Marshall Islands. And the U.S. is up under U.S. jurisdiction. Liechtenstein. Once again, this is up under Switzerland. We keep hearing the same names pop up. Nauru. Now speak this correctly for me, Rise. N-A-U-R-U.
Nauru.
Nauru. And this is up under the Australian jurisdiction. And number one that doesn't have a standing army is the Swiss Guard. Excuse me, the Vatican City. But that's who guards it, the Swiss Guard. Which, if I'm not mistaken, isn't that its own personal army?
Yeah, they're one of the three city states. It's the Vatican City, Washington D.C., and London.
In London.
Yeah, the triads, and they're the ones who basically run different aspects of the global control system. The finance, I believe, is London. Religion, of course, is Vatican City. And I believe the military wing is D.C. If I remember correctly,
yes,
I might
you
be
are correct.
Correct. Yeah.
You are correct. But that's just 10 that don't have a standing army. And outside of the Vatican, which it actually does, but I guess under U.S. law, it isn't. That everybody else is controlled by somebody else. Mm-hmm. Let me find this next one that I want to get into, because it is 36, I believe 36.
Mm-hmm. It's 36 one.
And I just want to run by these names. I ain't gonna tell who all they who all govern them. I just want to show you the people that don't have a standing army. All of these people are up under somebody else's jurisdiction. And this all goes into the question of the night. Which came first, the standing army or nationality? Now, the reason I ask that is the same reason I can't find that article. I'm going to just disregard that and go straight on to my question. The reason I wanted to ask that question, especially with all the nation building that's going on, all of the I get you, Scotty, it's more of a militia. With all of this going on right now, we are putting ourselves into situations to where we can be thoroughly beat and or killed at any moment's notice. And the constant response is, that couldn't have been me, or I would have done this. Obviously, the people who state this time and time again have not been roughed up by the officers before. These slave catchers have no feelings for you, and they will love nothing more than to run your face through the car shell. The window shell, excuse me. Or into the brick wall on the side of the store, or up against that pole on the corner, or into the fence at that basketball park. And we did the Brother Rise had mentioned it earlier, but we had did a show and we featured that article where that law had come into play at, and I believe that I had read the law afterwards. If they feel threatened, they can kill you. They are allowed to use deadly force. So when we put people in these positions, those of us who are telling people to go out and do these type of things, we have no standing army. We've had communities. Now just think about this. We've had communities that were successful. And what ended up happening to them? Now the door has swung so wide open that we don't even get along with each other. So it's, we have to start with even becoming a community. Partial unity, I guess. Can't even say unity. Partial.
Yeah, I was
before
saying,
we can even have people stand up and take up for people that's being treated this way. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's being recognized is force. Have we not seen that with the play that's been going on? And when I say play, there's no pun intended, but that's what it is. It's an act. We not worried about if Kim Jong-un has those missiles yet. Because truth be told, he either got them or they're afraid of China. Because every other country that we had these conversations with, they didn't even get a knock on the door. You didn't do what I say? Okay.
Knocking off.
It's a reason for this standoff. Always has been. Go ahead, Ross. I heard you.
Oh, no, I was just saying, you know, community, that term, it just stands out to me, you know, as a weird combination of the term common and unity. And you got to unify around a common theme in order to have a community. Because when you do that, then the people treat the community a certain way, they respect it a certain way, and they want to maintain control of what happens in that community so that it stays a good community. If, you know, if that's what your intention is, and that's usually what the intention is. And if you're in a situation where you don't get along with people and you don't have something to unify around in a common manner where everybody agrees, like, yes, this is what we all want from living in this collective circle of human beings that come together to form this particular community, then, you know, like you were saying, it's going to fall apart. So we have to do that. And that's exactly what, you know, ending the system of white supremacy and the system of slavery is about. It's about unifying around the problem. If you're focusing on slavery, then unifying around the problem of slavery and how to end it. Nothing else, not your religion, not any other concepts that you might deal with outside of the context of unifying to end slavery. And the same thing would go for the system of white supremacy and so on and so forth. It's just being able to focus and really look past your differences towards what you have in common with the person and what both groups or multiple groups of people are trying to facilitate. And that's pretty much what it's about. So that's all I wanted to add to that.
My fault. I had muted myself. My fault.
I was just about to ask you if you did. Go ahead.
The reason I asked that question, man, is because, like I was saying, we all scattered out, and Scotty has made the I can't recall the group that was trying to do that, but just taking up so many states in the South.
Yeah,
and you have the majority population. You be able to say again?
The Republic of New Africa. That was
yes,
I know,
yes.
Tupac was associated with that group before he passed away. And Mutu Shakur as well, if I remember correctly, and a whole bunch of other black freedom fighters next.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the only way you're going to have some type of militia that you could even attempt to protect yourself with. I see you right there, Scotty, but let me just do this real quick, because this was one of those other articles, and y'all go check this out, CNBC.com. 36 nations with no standing military, and it, I'm just want to read this, these first two, I mean this first paragraph. In the United States, which has 1.3 million active duty troops and spends more on defense than the next seven countries combined, it's hard to imagine there are countries without standing military. Now, this, the reason I read that is because I want you to think about this. Even once we, for some reason, we was able to all get on the same page and start doing this, a lot of us spread out don't even have weapons. You know, as far as firearms, I mean, and some of us that have them don't even know how to use them.
That too.
So when we get this concept of these things that work for us up under our nationality, we don't even have nothing to enforce that. So what does that mean? You just walking into a butt whooping every time, for the most part, 8 times out of 10, you're gonna catch that work. And it's crazy, man, because people are sending you out there with a blindfold. And you will get hurt. But Brother Scotty, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, going back to my comments. Now, I could be incorrect because I haven't read up on them in a while. But the Republic of New Africa, let me first frame my comments. When I hear people on social media talking about nation building and we need our own nation and this, that, and the other. So my comments were, the only way I see that happening is for a mass migration to agreed upon states that of course would border each other. Hopefully it would have coastal area, and that you just within the framework of the state laws is you just take over all area of people activity in those states, because you are the numeric majority. That means that you then have the power to put who you want in office and the rule makers and the lawmakers and all of that good stuff. Then, right. Then you could work on nation building. Now, if you choose, you could pull a Confederate States of America move and be like, and we even hear, when Obama was in office, we heard about states like Texas talking about seceding from the Union. Well, before
California,
before you can even do something like that, first you have to be in control of a military, which a National Guard or state militias, or that, you know, that's pretty much a army for the state,
right,
and what have you. So you got to come in control of those things before you even think about seceding from the Union. Okay,
that's right.
And that's the only way that I felt, you know, was possible, because again, we don't have an army, we don't even really have a militia. So how you gonna take them by force? You can't take them by force. Now the Republic of New Africa's ideology is asking the United States to give us those states, not take them. Okay, and my response to that is, well, how long you willing to wait on that? How many lifetimes you willing to wait on these people who run this government or this corporation are just going to give you some states? You know what I'm saying?
And they're not doing that.
It's not happening. And I thought, you know, y'all title was very interesting, which came first, you know, standing army or nationality, which, you know, I can also translate that to say a nation. And my study of history, most nations, including this one, was established by an army first. You had to have an army first to take the land in order for you to establish your nation upon it. Those are my comments.
Absolutely. That's brilliant.
And I agree with you.
brilliant.
Go ahead, Ryan.
No, I was saying he made brilliant commentary, because that is exactly what it is. You cannot have the organization to establish yourself as a nation without first establishing, protecting that particular space that you're choosing to dominate. And that's just pretty much what it is. Even with lions, that's the male lion's job, is establish the boundaries of the territory and patrol those boundaries. That's why he gets to eat first, because he protects the babies and he protects the females. So he has to be in tip-top shape at all times to go to war with other male lions. So he's the standing army, and the family's able to live in peace under his protection unless something happens to him. You know, and then at that point, that's when the young cubs are in danger, because the new males want to establish their own bloodline. So they kill the babies of the previous male, and immediately, shortly thereafter, the female goes into estrus, and then he starts establishing his line by mating with the female of the party took over, the females of the party took over. So that's natural law played out in the human sphere. And that makes perfect sense to me too. You know, even when you study the first invasion of Kemet, that's what happened. They first, you know, set up trading posts, and everything was about trade, and the outsiders then set up settlements along the border. And then once enough people made the settlements on the border, the army came in. that's how it went down. You know, you can't do it without the army. You can't take someone else's, you know, territory without an army to fight for that plot of land.
Let's switch it. We're not even... What if we already just paid for the land the way that they... Let's say we go by what the law say, mm-hmm. and we just purchase all of that land. Well, if you don't have that militia there, and you really know how to work that militia, you ain't gonna be able to protect that land. Forget taking mm-hmm. some; you can't even protect yourself right now.
And that's the one thing, when you look at, like, you know, Black Wall Street, they didn't have a militia. You know, they were it was basically like a sundown town situation, just that they didn't give them time to get out. They just killed as many people as possible, and people just left their houses, and white folks for the most part moved out of the vacated properties that they didn't burn down and took over. You know, there's a great documentary on YouTube called Banished that deals with people, actual stories of Black people who were run out of their homes, and when they trace it back legally, they find that there was never a title transfer from the Black family to the white family, because these people were run out of town. They left, you know, running for their lives with the clothes on their back. And it follows one family, you know, dealing with that situation, just trying to get the body of the person's grandfather relocated next to his wife's body, because they couldn't even be buried next to each other because of racism. And the state was still practicing racism on him and wouldn't facilitate him getting his grandfather's body out the ground to be relocated. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that that type of stuff has happened to, or they were forced to leave, you know, because they might have practiced some Black self-respect. You know, my wife's grandfather, paternal grandfather, that's how they ended up in Jersey. They were originally from Americus, Georgia. And my father-in-law's father killed a white man in retaliation for racial abuse. And he got his family and got the heck up out of there. And that's how they ended up in Jersey. And the family basically never really talked about it. And one day, you know, my father-in-law and I were just sitting there having a conversation, you know, him and I in the car, and he just happened to tell me this story. And then I asked my wife, I said, "Did you know about this?" She said, "No." She said, "Yeah, they never talked about that type of stuff at all." He said, and my father-in-law told me, he said, "Yeah, the family didn't really talk about it, but that's how we ended up in Jersey." I was like, "Wow, okay." You know, so you never know what motivates people to relocate. But yeah, I don't think that it's possible.
Their preservation.
Yeah,
their preservation, man. And I think as Brother Scott has stated, standing army, for those who hadn't caught the answer to the question, yeah, standing army came because we could do culture and get things set for years to come. We could start doing all of that now. Mm-hmm. But until you have the manpower, the equipment, and the willpower. Let's not forget that. To protect this family that we're trying to get started, everything else is just talk. I mean, and it's dangerous to send people out into the world as you would like it to be when they have to deal with the reality of how it is. I always understand those two things. And with that being said, if nobody has anything to add, we can go ahead and get into these next few articles, because I know you had some on this health and wellness. We almost 10 minutes to the break. And
okay.
Just in case you didn't see it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
Can I be heard?
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead, Brother Chris.
I got something to say. It's not pretty much on this topic, but it's just a real quick, like, couple of minutes on the sister had came in and she said the Roseanne show got canceled.
Yeah.
Because of the racial statement. She really didn't make a racial statement. Because the lady is from, who she talked about, she's from actually born over there in the Middle East. That's where she was born. So she was kind of making fun of how she looked like. But at the same time, I ain't covered her tracks. But her show, if you ever looked at her show, I watched it because I kind of grew up on the show as a kid. You know, you see it and it came back. So I just watched it. Mm-hmm. And if you look at her episodes, she was dealing with opioids. She had opioids. She was hooked on opioids because her knee was hurt. She also talked about illegals when her husband was working with her brother and they needed money to fix her knee. So what he did was, she said, "You're going to hire the illegals." She said, "Yeah." So he got a bid and he was getting ready to have illegals work for him so that he could get the money and pay him less. She also talked about health care and how they getting shafted, and her grandson is a transsexual, or he dresses in girls' clothes, her youngest grandson. So I kind of feel that her show was pointing on real issues, and I think that they was like, "Yo, you giving too much info on the new modern family." And
very interesting.
Also,
hey, Brother Scott, to say, what about them Planet of the Apes comments?
I don't think she was. I never knew the lady was a sister, though. That, you know, I think the Planet of the Apes, if you look at her, if you try to crack on somebody, she do kind of look like, you know what I'm saying? What I seen her.
I ain't never seen her.
Yeah, I haven't either.
She do kind of look like a monkey, so I see why she said that. That's why she says, you know, if you're joking against somebody, you're like, "So monkey looking." You know what I'm saying? If somebody look like an ape, you know, you're cracking on them. Make a comment like that. I think she just old.
You think it was just her and her comedy?
I think it was her comedy. It wasn't racist, because you gotta understand, man. And plus, this ain't the 80s no more, where you could say little slick stuff. I think basically it's more people involved in this business. It's more money. It's more hands in it. For them to fire her like that shows that she didn't have no ownership in that show.
You think they might have brought her up there just too far? I mean, like you said, we knew what to expect when she started doing her show. I came up on it too. You know what I'm saying? She always had some nasty comments toward folks, but
right,
we just
right.
accepted it. And I guess laughed at it to keep
thing,
being upset.
There is a historical
thing,
context.
I think it was the Muslim thing. I don't think it was the ape thing, because they don't care about us like that. It was the Muslim, because she already had issues with the Muslim show. She had the Muslims on there. She was talking about y'all from this place and y'all got bombs and why y'all got all this fertilizer.
That is possible, because I've seen
Muslims got a lot. Islam got a lot of money involved in people that practice Islam. They got a lot of money involved in that entertainment business on the back end. And
they do too.
The topics that I just said, she was exposing. There's no show that really exposed the average family like that, with how she was doing it. You know,
right.
Showing her hooked on opioids and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying?
Because she's played the working class white family. Even though Roseanne Barr is a racist, But she, in that show, she is playing the average working class white family,
which
is, you know, their mentality is very closed-minded, very xenophobic. They tend to be very racist and usually overtly racist. That's not to generalize, but on average, that's what she tends to experience with them. So, you know, I see it.
Yeah, when you get that high up, when you get that high up in her position, you don't really expose what's going on. You know, especially in our communities and just in ourselves, you are practicing racism. You're basically looking out for your own self, so you're not going to display what really goes on, even though you know there's a problem. But I think her show, I think they pulled the plug on her also because of you get older, you already settled, you start exposing, you start being like, look, I can say this. I'm paid. I'm straight.
You become less.
I'm gonna see what the brother Scotty got to say, but like you said, I grew up listening to Roseanne. She's been racist for a long time. She's been saying a lot of racist stuff on them shows for a long time.
Yeah,
but we living in a different time to where everybody's not accepting it.
Yeah.
So, brother Scotty, what's your thoughts? Because I didn't even see it, but I wouldn't expect nothing no less from her. I figured they brought her back just too fire for this exact reason.
Nah, I don't know about all that. Now, I watched the show a couple of times 20 years ago. I was not a fan of the show. I'm just not a fan of watching those type of shows because I don't identify with those type of people. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, I was never a fan of hers, but that's beside the point. But the context in which she said it, and it was political because she was responding to, and I'm not going to say it's a conspiracy theory because WikiLeaks did expose that not Valerie Jarrett, but the Obama administration's CIA was spying on French elections and what have you. So when that's what she was responding to, and they were saying Valerie Jarrett covered it up. So she says that Valerie Jarrett is, this is what she said, Muslim Brotherhood plus Planet of the Apes equal Valerie Jarrett. Muslim Brotherhood is a political organization that was established in the 1950s for Arab independence and taking control of the regions that they live in. And they have been under assault by white supremacy. You know, because they, if you look at the so-called CIA-sponsored Arab Spring, the Muslim Brotherhood was prime targets of that. And then they even got outlawed. This is a political organization that ran political candidates and what have you. But they are being, over here, they're portrayed as terrorists. Okay?
Right.
So it was anti-Muslim on that tip. And then the Planet of the Apes, yes, that's racist. And it doesn't matter if, you know, we think a black person resembles a monkey or not. We know what that means. The historical context, as Ross was alluding to, when they use it towards a person of color. And Valerie Jarrett identifies as an African-American. Okay. So, and then she not only said that, but then she made incorrect statements about George Soros, floating around conspiracy theories that he was a Jew in Germany and during the Nazi regime, and he was turning in other Jews and stealing their wealth, and that's how he got to be rich, which is a complete lie. Okay, so the reason I felt like, especially with this fallout from Starbucks and other stuff that's been going on, her making those comments in that context, in a political context, I felt like ABC had no choice but to let her go or face the backlash or being targeted for boycotts. If I'm an advertiser, would you advertise on a program with a woman putting out her thoughts like that? And let's not forget, she's a Trump fan. She's an admitted Trump fan. Trump loves her. And are we going to say Trump ain't racist? So I feel like they absolutely was racist in the historical context of how we've been portrayed as being nothing more than apes. And it was also Islamophobic. Islamophobia.
Islamophobic, yeah.
And portraying the Muslim Brotherhood as terrorists when they were a nonviolent political organization that have been running candidates since the 1950s and were attacked by, the CIA, the United States. And so I didn't watch her show. We can talk truth. We can expose truth, but let's also remember she ain't writing the show. She wasn't a writer on the show. She was just the star of the show. Right. Wanda Sykes was a producer. And Wanda Sykes said when the comments came out that she was going to quit the show. And then the other actress said that when she heard the comments, she was in the process of quitting the show. So, we all entitled to our opinions. We perceive what we perceive. But I perceive it to have been racist and also anti-Muslim. And it falls right in line with these white supremacist, racist, crude racists. You know, and what they've been saying since, you know, especially since Donald Trump. See, Donald Trump has made these people feel bold enough to say what they think.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely correct.
I agree with that, with the Muslim. I didn't know what she identified as I'm clueless to that, so you just educated me.
Yeah, we found.
Yeah, because you got to remember, the pseudoscience called phenology, where they would measure skulls of black people to compare us to monkeys. That's where all of that, there's a historical context. Even President Obama, they depicted him as a chimpanzee on the cover of the New York Daily News getting shot down by two police officers.
The Google,
Michelle Obama,
Google
too.
Thing.
Michelle Obama.
I knew about the monkey thing. I knew about the racist monkey jokes. I'm aware of that. I just didn't know what this woman identified herself as.
Before we go to break, I didn't catch none of it. And what I was saying is that with all of the stuff that's going on since Trump come back, to put her back on the air, this she been doing this for a long time before it got canceled. Same type of crude jokes. It was just a matter of time. But right now, we are at the bottom of the hour. You are listening to Real Life on Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be back right after these commercial breaks.
Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
Welcome back to the show. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, brother. That was quite the interesting.
I'll put
I'm
her
just
background.
Have to go catch up on
I'll
that and see the context
the
and
chat.
Everything. But yeah, she's a foul mouth one. Go ahead, Scotty.
Hey, I put Valerie Jarrett's background in the chat, and Chris is right. She was born here, but she is of American, an African American. She was born in Iran. To her parents, James E. Bowman and Barbara T. Bowman. One of her maternal great grandfathers, Robert Robinson Taylor, was an architect who was the first accredited African American architect and the first African American student enrolled at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
MIT. Wow.
MIT.
Yeah, that's dope. Thanks, Scotty. I was teaching that too. Yeah,
but I didn't She's always been foul, man. And to see her, when I seen that the show was coming back out, it was just a matter of time. And that's why I say I think they put her up there for these particular reasons. And, you know, some things, when you just see them, you know they wrong. You know it's going to be something. But
yeah, and they left, when I say this real quick, when I Googled her, I guess I didn't Google deep enough, because when I first Googled her, I put race on there, and it would not give me, it wouldn't tell me. So then I start seeing some older pictures of her, and then I start seeing some, you know, but I still didn't know what she was. But yeah, that's some good info right there.
Hey, Jenna,
go ahead, Scott. I know you had something before we go
this
to
is,
this next.
This is why I think they brought her back. Because of Trump. Because they knew that type of program resonated with Trump-type voters. And they made a whole lot of money when they first brought it back. I don't think I don't think they willingly. I mean, this is a perfect atmosphere for that program. But I don't think. And they tried to tell her to stop talking about this other stuff and just focus on the show. But she
couldn't do it.
She couldn't do it. And so I think they gave her no choice, because these white supremacists ain't just going to throw money in the trash without good reason. They was figuring that she going to cost us more money than in the long run than what we're making off of her now. And like they said, we might be codified racist. We don't want to be overt and connected to that. And they was like, how can we spend this? This is what the CEO said. He says no way to spend it. So they thought about how we gonna spend this. Oh, we can't spend it. So I guess that means we got to get rid of it.
Yo, this I agree with everything you're saying, Scotty. But like I said, like you said, you called a couple of shows a long time ago. No, my grandmama used to watch that joint, and this lady has been foul the entire time I've ever known her. And don't even have to curse sometimes. You're right. This is a perfect time for them Trump supporters. But they just couldn't hold her. She couldn't hold herself, because she was getting away with saying some old crazy stuff anyway. But she just had to let the world know what she was thinking. I'm glad she got fired. Forget that. go ahead, Roz.
Oh, no, I was going to say, we're going to transition to some of this health stuff, and because he's starting to learn. We're low on time, so I figured we'll jump into it. The first thing I wanted to talk about, it was a great article I found, and it's from ScienceAlert.com. It's entitled "Marijuana Compound Removes Toxic Alzheimer's Protein from the Brain." An active compound in marijuana called tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, has been found to promote the removal of toxic clumps of amyloid beta protein in the brain, which are thought to kickstart the progression of Alzheimer's disease. So it says, I'm just reading certain sections, not the whole thing. Although other studies have offered, this is a quote, although other studies have offered evidence that cannabinoids might be neuroprotective against the symptoms of Alzheimer's, we believe our study is the first to demonstrate that cannabinoids affect both inflammation and amyloid beta accumulation in nerve cells, says one of them, David Schubert from the Salk Institute for Biological Studies in California. Then he's talking about THC. So he says, Schubert and his colleagues tested the effects of THC on human neurons grown in the lab that mimic the effects of Alzheimer's disease. If you're not familiar with this special little compound, it's not only responsible for the majority of marijuana's psychological effects, including the high. Thanks to its natural pain-relieving properties, it has also been touted as an effective treatment for the symptoms of everything from HIV and chemotherapy to chronic pain, post-traumatic stress disorder, and stroke. In fact, THC appears to be such an amazing medical agent, researchers are working on breeding genetically modified yeast that can produce it way more efficiently than it would be to make synthetic versions. So they said the compound works by passing from the lungs to the bloodstream, where it attaches to two types of receptors, cannabinoid receptor CB1 and CB2, which are found on all cell surfaces all over the body. In the brain, these receptors are most concentrated in neurons associated with pleasure, memory, thinking, coordination, time perception, and usually binds with a class of lipid molecules called endocannabinoids that are produced by the body during physical activity to promote cell-to-cell signaling in the brain. THC can bind to them in much the same way, and when they do, they start messing with the brain's ability to communicate with itself. So they're kind of telling you like how it works, essentially. And it says, over the years, research has suggested that by binding to these receptors, THC could be having another effect on aging brains because it appears to help the body clear out the toxic accumulations or plaques of amyloid beta, BETA. No one's entirely sure what causes Alzheimer's disease, but it's thought to result from a buildup of two types of lesions, amyloid plaques and neurofibrillary tangles. So basically it's saying that this is the first substance that is actually known to clear out the problematic aspects of the degenerative nerve symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. And that's really promising and very interesting, because there's an article that I have actually featured on my, if you click on my name on BTR Community, it's there, from Jack Herrera, who wrote a book called The Emperor Wears No Clothes, and it's all about the history of marijuana and then its eventual outlaw status. And he tells a story about his mother suffering from Alzheimer's and him giving her marijuana cigarettes to smoke, and that he saw an immediate change and for the better from his mom. So he said that he basically was visiting her at the time, so he ended up rolling her like 60 joints. He put them in little medicine bottles and he showed her where they were so that she could, you know, smoke, I think it was like two a day. And then he said he would, you know, roll her more to make sure she had it. So he said during the time she was doing it, everything was fine. She basically was back to her normal self and was not having any problems whatsoever. Now, her husband didn't really know about what she was doing, and he had found the cigarettes and threw them away because he had that old mentality that weed is bad for you, and he just threw them in the garbage, and she ended up dying within a couple months' time. It's like he said the Damn. Disease came back with a vengeance, and within a couple months' time, she expired. And that article's there. So this is his personal experience, and he's not the only one who's had that type of experience. Another thing you can do to help relatives that suffer from Alzheimer's is to cease all gluten and all sugar, because sugar inflames the nervous system, and the nervous system does not have its own pain receptors. So you will not know that the brain is inflamed, but you might see behavioral changes that will indicate that the brain is inflamed. If a person has impulse control issues, they start acting out, sometimes violently, they start cursing and becoming belligerent, and it comes out of nowhere and they're dealing with Alzheimer's dementia, then that usually is a sign that the brain is inflamed. Something else you could do too is use essential oils. Essential oils are really good for helping with brain inflammation. Rosemary is one that I know off the top of my head that's really good for that. But there's actually a few others. And so I just wanted to put that particular bit.
Well, hold on, Ross.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, what is the action, if you know, what is the action that happens when you're trying to cool down the brain, per se?
Well, the brain needing to cool down would be usually in a situation.
Oh, you chopping up. You chopping up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me now? Okay. Yeah. So I was saying, to cool the brain down, usually what happens in the instance of where you have fever. And fever is the body's natural protective mechanism against bacterial or viral infection, where the brain will trigger to raise the body temperature a few degrees warmer than normal, and because viruses and bacteria usually live within a certain body temperature range, which is normal to our 98.6. So in order to kill it, it tries to raise the temperature to a point in which the virus itself cannot withstand. And it's supposed to be for a temporary period, and then once the infection is killed off, then it should go back down to its normal 98.6 temperature. But if you have a situation where the brain is tricked into this severe heat state and is unable to revert back, then there's, you know, different things you might want to do to facilitate cooling the body down fast. Sometimes putting the person in an ice bath is really good for that. also you can utilize, like, I would say bags of ice around the base of the neck and on the shoulder area, because that means that the brain itself is not figuring out how to cool itself down. I'm trying to think, because there are herbs you can take too to facilitate alleviating fever, but
another thing that I was going to ask you when you get done.
What was that?
Just give us a few of those. We ain't going to go through all of them.
I know peppermint is good for that too. Spearmint is good for that, because those are both cooling herbs. So they do also help with respiratory issues as well. You can put boil a pot of water and put three to five drops of like peppermint essential oil in the pot, and have a person put their face over the steam and put a towel over their face to, you know, keep all the steam underneath the towel, and have them inhale that, and that'll definitely help open the lungs up, and that'll get it into the system quickly via breathing it in, because essential oils are like the best parts of plants in an extremely highly concentrated form. So they're not things that you play around with. You have to dilute them before putting them on the skin, or they can actually cause something known as essential oil burns. Something that I'm dealing with now, and it was something that happened to me accidentally, but I got to get that taken care of too. But it's some of that stuff is really strong, and the one that I got caught by was cinnamon bark, and that is extremely strong, and my skin is just sensitive to it, so I got to get that taken care of. But go ahead.
Chris got a question. Because I wanted to, I know it's a few things that I do as preventive maintenance and all with herbs, and for whatever reason now, anytime I take any kind of, I can't even take an aspirin and feel like myself. Mm-hmm. These are essential for me. But I'll ask this question in a minute. But Chris says, what's a sinus pain that causes toothaches? It causes toothaches.
I've never heard of sinus.
I don't know, brother Chris. Yeah. I don't have sinuses, so I wouldn't.
Yeah,
I'm not familiar with that.
I know some people have deviated septums that can cause them to get really bad sinus infections, where like almost any time they catch a cold or anything like that, it automatically turns into a sinus infection, and usually those people have problems with a deviated septum, which means that the bones in the nose have been misaligned in some way, whether it's via accident or if they were born that way, and it creates a situation where infection can fester, and then they get like post nasal drip and things like that, and it'll turn into an infection. Some people are more prone to that than others, and sometimes it might not be a deviated septum. It just might be something that they are predisposed to. One thing you can do to help with the sinus infection would be to utilize colloidal silver in a nebulizer.
Ginger thing, also.
Yeah, ginger is really good too. And then another good thing is if you can, because all colds and flu start in the ears first, and then they travel into the sinuses and into the lungs. So if you can actually clean the ears out, the ear canal, you can either use hydrogen peroxide, like the one 3% you find in the store. You just put it in the ear, you let it sit in there for like maybe 10 to 15 minutes, and then you drain it out, and then you do the other ear. I usually do it at least twice a month, and that will be a great preventive. Another thing you can do is you can use colloidal silver. Just put like maybe 2 drops in the ear, and then you drain it out, and you do the same in the other ear. And that can basically stop an infection from actually starting in the ear and then moving into the throat and the nose. Yeah. That's one way of really preventing those types of things. I would say if you can diffuse 4-Thieves oil, that's one of probably the top oil, I would say, for disinfecting the air. You can also put it in sprays to clean and disinfect around the house. You can put it in a spray bottle to do that. If you want to mop your floor with it, you can use it in that capacity, and it's an excellent germ killer. If you dilute it with like a carrier oil, and a carrier oil would be like jojoba oil or coconut oil or olive oil, you can put maybe 10 drops in like 1 ounce in a 1 ounce bottle of a carrier oil, and you can use it on your hands as a sanitizer. So you have that way instead of walking around with those chemicals. Yeah,
Ross, we're gonna have to get into the health and wellness later on. I tried to get to it earlier, but before we go, I'd like for you to give the speak about the colors and how they play on our psyche to help calm us down and put us in different type of moods.
Oh yeah, that's actually an interesting thing.
The visuals.
Because color therapy is something that I think they call it chromatherapy or something like that. But it basically deals with colors and how colors affect your mood and your personality, things like that. I'm going to get into that now. Let me see.
I got one I can share if you need it. Aromatherapy and color therapy working together, or you wanted a different one?
Oh, I was looking at color therapy. You are the colors you choose. That was the one I was looking at.
All right, well, go ahead.
Okay, so it says, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to touch on certain things. It is now accepted. This is from thoughtco.com, and it's entitled Color Therapy, You Are the Colors You Choose. It is now accepted that color therapy can be used to stimulate or inhibit certain behaviors. Advertising executives are well aware that a product can have a completely different impact if the color of the packaging is changed. Psychologists have found that certain colors in our immediate environment can help us perform some tasks. For example, exercise is best performed in an environment of warm colors such as reds and oranges, whereas the tranquil blues and greens are ideal for mental concentration. Quite often, the sayings in English language have tapped into a deeper interpretation of the colors. Red with rage, green with jealousy, purple, passion, feeling blue, and feelings associated with the color blue, and I don't know, something that says with yellow, but I don't think they have the word spelled right, are well known to most people. But however, each color has a cornucopia of meanings associated with it. A Swiss psychiatrist, Carl Jung, encouraged his patients to use color in their paintings to express the deepest unconscious parts of their psyches. We all go through favorite color phases. It has been discovered that personality traits are reflected by a preferred color. Extroverts favor red, introverts prefer blue. Yellow is the choice of intellectuals, and well-balanced individuals tend to go for green. And then it says, are you prepared to wear your feelings on your sleeve? Why do you look great in something one day, and the next time you wear the same outfit, it looks dreadful? It is because the color no longer reflects who you are in that moment. Wearing a color can cause you to act and react to life in different ways. Your choice of color offers insight into current life issues and can, in some instances, warn of potential illnesses. Color and illnesses. Each color has positive attributes or truth, and opposites of these are challenges. For instance, the truth of blue symbolizes faith and communication. The challenge is a lack of faith, depression, and difficulty with speech. Conscious awareness of the colors you choose to wear can offer insight into potential change in your life. For example, illness of some kind can be indicated when a color that is out of character is worn frequently. If red is worn regularly, it could point to a physical condition. Blue, an emotional imbalance, and yellow, in a nervous state. Disease means that we are out of balance. Color can help to rebalance and make us whole again. Red is good for improving circulation. Orange has been found to be beneficial for children with autism. Green is useful for calming and balancing the heart, and is supposed to influence regeneration of cells and elimination of toxins. This is the basis of color therapy. Color healing was used in the temples of Heliopolis in ancient Egypt, as well as in China and India. Hippocrates, the founder of modern-day medicine, placed color strips on cuts to aid in the healing process. So I'll just stop there, but the article is actually in the thread, the real-life thread for tonight, but it just really gets into the psychological impact of colors and how they manifest for people, and it usually will coincide with a lot of different things. Even in there's a book written by Lloyd Strayhorn called Numbers in You, and it deals with people's birth date, the times of the year that they're born, lucky numbers associated with their birthday, as well as colors and things of that nature. And what I found, because he's a renowned numerologist, and he actually did a reading on my mother, and she had let me listen to the reading, And everything he said about her, just using her birthday, was accurate, even to the point where he said she had two children, and one of those children would be a seven child, which was me, and the other one would be a two, which was my sister. And he was accurate with all of that. My mother didn't tell him nothing about herself. And he just told her all of this stuff, and she was just like tripped out by the accuracy of what he was talking about. So colors, and he talks about colors in his book. His book is called Numbers and You, for people interested in just fine. And he also discusses numerology and how to assign numerical attributes to letters, so that when you spell your name or you spell certain words, those words have specific numerical attributes that add to the deeper esoteric understanding of what the powers of certain words are. So he gets into that as well in the text, and gives you lucky numbers, your lucky day of the week, lucky months of the year, all of that type of stuff. And yeah, I found it to be quite accurate personally, and I'm not the only one.
You know,
yeah. Go ahead.
I'm not big on the numerology. I done seen a few things, but it, yeah, that's something different. But those colors, man, they play on mm-hmm. your psyche. Same reason why we put certain colors in for our children when they little. You know, the psychiatrist, when I was taking my psychology class, psychiatrists, they like light blue and a comfortable yeah. feeling. So you give up all your information. And it's not just angry as far as the red, you know, red and yellow put together, that triggers your hunger with inside of you.
Right.
That's why McDonald's, big food chains use those colors. You know, it's these colors play a lot. Go ahead, Brother Raj.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's funny. I had a reading done by a Yoruba priestess years ago. It was myself and my wife and my son were there for the reading. And one of the things that they told me was that I should not wear the color red. And color red is one of my favorite colors. My other one is that olive green, like the color you see in the military. And they said that because of the deities that I'm associated with, that are my particular so-called guardian angels, and the fact that I have a very fiery temper, that to wear the color red would not only put me in a state of mind where I'll be more aggressive, but it also attracts certain types of energy to us that can sometimes lead to violent encounters.
Mm.
So it was something I was warned about a long time ago. So I don't wear the color red very often. And it's funny because I noticed that when I was younger and I would get into trouble, that was a color I wore a lot. So a lot of things really coincided, you know. So even my patron deity, his colors, which are the colors of kingship, are red and white. So, you know, I have to watch that particular color. I do use it in my spiritual practice for certain things, to bring out certain things when I'm trying to work on certain spiritual things. But as far as wearing it, yeah, I'm very, very cautious, and very, very rare do I wear red. Or at least I wouldn't wear an entirely red shirt. It might have a splash of red in it, but red is not like the prominent color. You know, so yeah.
Well, you know, it's just part of the laws of attraction. You can get any entry-level psychology book and start just peeping out these things. That way, when you see certain things on TV, it won't trigger you as much because you're already aware mm-hmm. of why they're doing certain things. Just a little bit of small things like that. It could help you not spend $20 this week just knowing that that's why they're that color. Every time you ride by them, you ever wonder why your children, they want that McDonald's even though you told them it's bad and it don't taste as good as at home and all of this stuff. You know, that's that attraction, law of attractions being used by those colors. Everything is a gimmick, and once we figure that stuff out, then we'll be able to maneuver around this system a little bit cleaner, a little bit leaner. And even though I know some of these things, I still have hiccups, but hopefully some of you will be able to put this to better use. With that being said, we are down at the bottom. Ross, can you shoot the prayer out for us real quick and bring us on out of here. Thank you, Scotty. Peace.
Sure. Thanks, Scotty. Thanks to everyone for being with us this Tuesday evening. Please stay safe for the rest of the week. Have no contact with any slave catcher race soldiers, and stay safe. So we're going to get into the prayer and get up out of here. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times and all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another black person. It has been time to replace white supremacy with justice ASAP. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Thanks again for being with us this evening. Stay safe, peace and love, and we'll see you next week.
What up, son?
What's good, Dad?
Billie Holiday said a long time ago, no two people on earth are alike, and it's got to be the same way in music. Otherwise, it isn't music. Always remember, never follow the crowd. I have something important to tell you, and I'm gonna let you know.
What is